Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
How might the immediate aftermath of the most important election ever play out? We've defined four basic permutations, where Biden or Trump either win the Electoral College or the popular vote. Our point of interest is on the transition of power. An incumbent hasn't lost in 28 years, and Trump isn't exactly a rule follower.
So what happens if Trump wins? We just saw Trump move a bunch of people from civil servants over to political appointees. I mean, he can fire a whole bunch of people now. I think it's 100,000. Is that what it is? It's a huge number of individuals he can fire now.
Hopefully he fires Fauci, though.
The issue here, though, is that he can clean house. He can gut it out. So I think you're going to see Trump enact his petty revenge. That'll happen. I believe the Department of Justice, after he guts it, will probably go back after Hillary again. There's a strong chance that if Trump wins, he's going after Hunter Biden just to rub more shit into Joe Biden's face, just to pick on him. I think that towards the end of his term, he'll pardon his nutty-ass kids for all the corruption that they did. But we've already seen that it doesn't matter anymore. They can be corrupt all day long, and it doesn't matter. And if Trump wins, I'm pretty sure that means the Senate stayed Republican, right?
Maybe, probably. But that's an absolute component to kind of what a Trump victory looks like.
I think a Trump victory does look like he holds the Senate. Doesn't hold the House, holds the Senate, which means there's another split government. He owns the executive, he owns the courts, and he owns the Senate, which means Democrats have no power, which also means that down tickets probably went conservative because that's just going to be party line voting.
So the premise you just outlined is a scenario in which Trump fairly cleanly wins.
Yep.
The Electoral College. Of course, the popular vote doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
There's going to be a clean transition of power. Biden walks away as the biggest loser in presidential history, surpassing Hillary's demise in 2016.
Yep.
Kamala is hopefully made to be irrelevant.
Yep, hopefully.
But what about the scenario where, let's say Trump wins the Electoral College and he loses the popular vote by some giant number, and there's some election shenanigans going on. So we looked at a number of different, think tank or academic papers that discussed some of the presidential succession challenges that could happen. We'll summarize some of the common scenarios and provide a few of our own that were not discussed. The most common scenario raises the idea of modifying the assigned electors from a given state to bypass the outcome of the vote. Each state is responsible for defining how electoral college electors are assigned. Currently in every state, this is directly tied to the outcome of the election. This scenario envisions a ratification of this process, whereby the assignment of electors is changed by existing power structures within a state to a designated slate of electors. This procedure would vary by state, but a generic example would be the enactment of a new law passed by the legislature and signed by the governor, which would designate that the state's electors to the Electoral College would be a specific set of people. This would be completely legal within the bounds of the Constitution.
This is a Hillary Clinton scenario. This is where Biden gets plus 85 billion votes, but can't pick up the states needed to win. This is the shenanigans in Florida in which, you know, he should have won Florida, but he lost all 35 electoral votes or whatever's down there. This is the scenario where California is plus 25, but they don't really count all the votes because it's Electoral College, so it doesn't matter, right? It's just this crazy scenario. It's like this replay of 2016 in which now we have Super Biden that's going to come in here and save the day.
And it's kind of the worst case scenario for liberals because they have this notion that voting can fix all wrongs, but they would yet again be presented with the scenario in which voting doesn't actually solve the problem. So what happens? We can do the very benign scenario, which is Joe just kind of says, okay, fine, I lose. Take some Ambien like Hillary did on election night, doesn't do a concession speech, and everybody makes fun of her for the rest of her life. But what if there's some sort of shenanigans in some individual state that is sort of a tipping point where Trump won the Electoral College based on the results, but let's say there's another example like Florida in 2000 where the election is very close, the state is kind of at a loss for how to do a recount. The time elapses and, you know, we need to determine who won. And it's not clear who won. In Florida, we saw the governor, Jeb Bush, George Bush's brother have some sway over the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that happens in a state like Michigan. You have it controlled by Democrats. You have Gretchen Whitmer. Could they do something and just assign electors to the Electoral College? Override the will of the voters in whatever conception of completed count or an inaccurate count or an incomplete count to shift the election towards Biden in this scenario, just through a pure exertion of political power.
If the Democrats control the Senate and the House, they get to basically validate the electors. So they had the ability to then say that the electors that came from the rogue state are legal.
Under U.S. Code Title III, Section 5, the states have final say in designating electors. And Section 15 defines a process for any objections. If the House and Senate do not agree, the tiebreaker is decided by the determination of the executive of the state. If the Dems control both chambers, this is less of an issue. If the Republicans control the Senate, who knows what happens?
So the question is there room for the Supreme Court to step in here and challenge the legality of those electors?
No idea. It'd be a completely kind of uncharted constitutional area. I think the only couple of rulings that the Supreme Court has made, without being a legal expert, is that electors that are kind of legally appointed by states are not permitted to vote faithlessly. They must vote as they were bound by the state. So if you have a rogue state appointing electors and saying you have to vote for Biden, they are legally required to vote for Biden. And I think the other, I guess, scenario where the court would step in would be in this January 6th joint session where the House and the Senate decide what the Electoral College votes actually are, where the people actually physically vote for candidate A or candidate B, and you need to get to 270. But the Constitution is, I think, very explicitly clear that it's up to the House and the Senate. And that's about all it says. So my argument would be that the Supreme Court has no say in any action of the House and Senate with regard to who can be an elector, how the elector was appointed, any of that.
Basically neuters the Supreme Court in determining the election, whereas the Supreme Court determined the election in 2000, right?
Yep, by preventing the counting from occurring, which led to an outcome of electors getting appointed by Florida's existing law.
So in this scenario, we're talking about the ability of a state to go rogue and appoint it. I don't see this happening at all unless...
Zero chances happen.
Zero this chances happening. I think...
Zero chances happens from the Democratic side.
Yeah, they had no fucking heart or will to win. They want law and order worse than the fascists want law and order, just to make things normal. And it's so fucking sickening. I mean, what they do to stop the Supreme Court from being taken over by right wing nuts? Nothing.
They did the same thing that the Republicans did to COVID, which was nothing.
Yeah, it was nothing. Yeah, I mean, Feinstein hugged the Republican head of that.
Your boy Lindsey Graham.
I mean, hugged the man that was responsible for getting that terrible human being on the courts. All right, so that scenario is kind of bunk. There's a scenario, though, where, I mean, California should probably challenge whether or not the census, if it's done before November 30th, counts for this year's election votes.
Yeah, there's all sorts of political plays that perhaps California could take it. They could subdivide themselves into five states or something.
Yeah, remember, because Trump wants to get the census done before he leaves office. So if they release numbers by January 1st, whatever that number is, California might be able to challenge and say, listen, as of this, we get a new appropriation of votes.
Each state sits on certifying their election results or something until after the census is complete and electoral college and representatives are allocated. Reapportionment is supposed to be done in the new Congress, but who knows if there's some legal maneuvering that could be done to delay the counting of electoral votes and then somehow apply the newly apportioned electoral votes to the previous election because it's not yet decided. Might be a play there. One of the elements discussed in some of these papers was Biden attempts to somehow trade reform of the Electoral College in exchange for like not outwardly contesting the election in the event that he wins the popular vote by a bunch. He tells like California and Oregon and Washington to like cede to like hurt public perception or something. Like it was a really like
dumb.
dumb, way out there, like, what if scenario that I, again, I don't see playing out at all by the Dems, but it really just screws over the rest of the country by having 85, 75, whatever the electoral colleges of those Western states just leave.
Yep. It's a liberal dream where they can have some sort of law and order with you know, fairness and this idea of kumbaya, instead of it being cutthroat politics where you're trying to control, you know, the fate of the country. It's well, in the future, we'll have a better chance of winning instead of you just being cutthroat and gutting it and making it win now. And it's shockingly insane that none of this is being brought up. I mean, AOC brought up the fact that, you know, the Republicans say we don't have guts to do anything, and it's true. The Democrats don't have any guts. Or they'd already be saying, we've aligned 14 generals to transfer the power.
Yeah, we've tried nothing, and we're all out of ideas.
That's right, yeah. I'm tired from doing nothing all day.
I'm just waiting for Sunday morning.
I mean, okay, the next scenario, if Biden wins by a landslide, there are going to be things like, we have a referendum on Trump's policies. So by landslide, he wins the popular vote by 4 million and he wins the Electoral College outright and just slaughters, right? Just smashes the door down. He wins by a bunch. I mean, there's not much that can happen there, right?
I think Trump's only play at that point is to try and save himself, whatever that looks like.
And I think, and we've talked about this before, about pardoning. He can't pardon himself. So the scenario that I love is that Trump resigns January 19th, Pence becomes president and pardons Trump, just like Ford kind of did, right, with Nixon. So I really believe in my mind that Trump will do everything he can to save himself. So he'll pardon everybody at all. I mean, every single person. And if I was Trump and being petty, I would do the Bill Clinton thing, right? I think it was Bill Clinton that switched all the hand receivers in the White House to screw with Bush. Some petty thing. And then probably fire anybody that I wanted to that was a political appointee. And just basically cause havoc and chaos the last week before the transition team had to come in. There's nothing keeping Trump from not causing chaos. Just pure chaos monster machine. Just act like a maniac.
So you're shredding documents, you're kind of antagonizing foreign countries. You might try and stoke flames with Iran or create some foreign policy issue that makes you like the strong man, which creates some basis by which you can't cede power because you're in a war or something and you need a steady hand or something. I think he absolutely guts the entire executive branch of everybody.
Yep, there's no one left over to tell Biden what he did. If I was him, I'd go a step further and declassify all of Obama's documents.
You could go the opposite route, too, and classify everything so that Biden can't get, intelligence reports during the transition so that he starts on January 20th and is, like, totally in the dark as to what's happened for the last 2 months. Which, again, doesn't matter. It's just chaos. And I don't see any way in which Trump does not try and save himself. I could see Trump creating like a media company and like creating a documentary in the last 3 months of his presidency and like streaming it to make money. He moves the residence to like Mar-a-Lago and like just does nothing for 3 months or tries to make as much money as possible. The lame duck Senate is going to let him do whatever he wants.
So, yeah, I think if Biden wins outright and it just looks like there's nothing that the Republicans can do, right? They're all out of options. They're not going to be able to fight it. It's just basically, you know, they lose, right?
And they can slam anybody into the courts that they want. It's probably going to happen anyway, but
I mean, Mitch McConnell's legacy is that he does a bunch of coke and he got through another Supreme Court nominee.
And he ran out of coke, so he had to do the Supreme Court.
That's so dope. Yeah, he ran out of court, so I want to hear you do two things, smuggle coke and confirm a Supreme Court candidate nominee. And I'm all out of coke. That's such a good fucking meme.
So there's an argument to be made that the Republican Senate really doesn't even care anymore about the outcome of the election. And that's kind of demonstrated by them just slamming through Amy Covid Barrett as quickly as possible. I think part of that is they're just taking an absolute sure thing, which is control of the court forever.
Yeah, 20 years. I mean, how old is she, like 50?
Yeah, it's for an extended period of time versus losing the executive branch for 4 years, 8 years,
whatever it is. Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's a shorter period of time. And the court is a guaranteed thing, so they just go to the political power bank and take the guaranteed sure thing. Trump wins or lose, they don't really care.
Nope.
So I think that was their political calculus with just getting the Supreme Court nominee through. And it's over and done. I don't think the Senate really cares whether Trump wins or loses at this point. I think there's actually an argument to be made that they prefer Trump losing because it allows them to point fingers at Biden and everybody else for couple years.
Yeah, they get to stop legislating, right?
Yep. Doing tax cuts for corporations does have some political blowback, and they'd be happy to pass the baton to the other party for a couple years.
Yep. I think the same thing. I think it's going to be hard-pressed for anybody, any side of this, to argue to legislate if you are the Republican Party. If the House is owned by the Democratic Party, you kind of want to lose the Senate because you're not getting anything done, and you're going to get blamed for just being shitty.
Just be a minority party and scream from the heavens about everything, which is what they did during the Obama years, and it was effective.
Yep, and it made them heroes, right?
Yep.
Heroes. And arguably, it set them up for the wins they have now.
Yeah, and it's a lot less work.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Like, they just get to sit there and take their cushy, whatever, $175K a year. They get some lobbyist money. They don't really have to do anything.
Nothing at all. Nope. Which is kind of a perversion of what the system is, but in the end, the system is set up that you have quote-unquote checks and balances, right? You kind of have it, you set up so that you can always have a winner and a loser. And if you're not the ruling party, you might as well be the losing party because you still get paid. Nothing's going to get done. If you reach across the aisle, you get voted out. So it's a good fundraising pitch. I mean, they've done their damage. No one wants to lose power, but I don't see why this wouldn't be a bad deal during a blowout. Just take your losses, regroup, and take your fundraising now because Biden's obviously going to take away guns, right? So, I mean, you might as well get your core group of people for you. You just won the abortion stuff, so there's no more court fight there. You have really nothing else you're going to fight on. So it's kind of like you kind of just have to do it. Like, just take your loss, regroup, try again.
Yeah, solidify your grift for a couple of years and come back.
Yep.
You know, with the competent fascist in 2024.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing else. I mean, yeah, if you're a senator, you don't want to lose. But if you are going to lose, you know, get rid of some of your weakest links in some of your blue states.
I mean, there's certainly a possibility that if Biden wins by enough, that the kind of electoral balance of the country is permanently and completely shifted. If Biden wins Texas, that's a problem for the Republican Party long term because it represents a loss of many House seats and the 30-ish electoral college votes that are probably gone for the next generation. So you have to start thinking about what's your map look like going forward. But at the same time, they have the courts. So it's all a calculation. And I just think they're fine with it.
Yeah, and I'll go back and say this. I think that not only are they fine with it, Mitch McConnell is probably looking forward to a break where he can just go back to mumbling like an asshole and smuggling coke. So Biden wins by a landslide. It's going to be weird. Trump's going to do as much as he can in the lame duck section to just be chaotic. He's not part of the ruling class that has lived their entire life attempting to be the ruling class and live with dignity or live with some sort of, you know, valor or honor that is beholden to the presence of the United States. He is just a guy who lives and dies by power. And I don't think he's going to give it up easily.
Right. He doesn't give a shit about political norms or civility or any of that stuff. And regardless of how many norms he breaks, the liberals are still like, oh, he's such a bad person. And, I mean, they're not wrong, but they also have this expectation that he's going to change, and it's just not.
No, the first thing that's going to make him a hero is returning to the norms of the Obama era. So we've already lost after Trump's tear down of Obama and the build back up of Obama's bullshit legacy, we've already lost 8 total years, right? And if, let's say, Biden's gets elected for the second term, nothing's going to change. So really, we've lost probably 12 years of progress just because of just the chaos that was caused under Trump.
All right, so let's discuss the most interesting scenario, which is a close election that Biden appears to have a subtle advantage in. Let's say he wins the Electoral College by maybe a state, and let's say he wins the popular vote by, you know, some equivalent-ish margin, like 0.5% or something. So it's a close election. But the point is that Biden appears to have won. So when I say appears, that's how it's reported. But what can Trump do to kind of negate that appearance?
Well, he's got the power of the Supreme Court. That's number one. So he can do the same thing that Bush did in 2000 to negate votes or stop recounts or any of the stuff that allowed Bush to win. You know, he has the power of those courts to do the same thing. He also has this Department of Justice that may actually be able to investigate, let's say, bullshit civil rights claims. Let's say that he converts a civil rights unit to go and be primarily for, you know, white rural voters who had their votes taken away through mail fraud. No, he's got a ton of stuff he can do there just by putting pressure and basically stealing the votes. You know, he can declare martial law if he wanted to because it's so close that there's nothing that anybody can do and there's just pure chaos. Again, just a chaos machine. Pure havoc.
I think if Trump were to find himself in this position, he would use every tool at his disposal. That's the courts. It's the Justice Department. Yep. He could seize ballots. He could close the post office. He could have the National Guard watch polling. He could have whoever he wanted to watch polling. He could do stuff like bribe public officials to ensure that the vote is counted appropriately. Otherwise, they're going to be declared enemy combatants and killed, just like Obama killed somebody who was an American citizen who was declared an enemy combatant. So there's plenty of precedent there. He can invoke maybe the Insurrection Act. He could federalize the National Guard. He could have governors of Republican states invoke the National Guard and use it as Trump's private army. There's a lot of just absolutely scary escalation that could go on. And there's no reason to believe that Trump won't do any of this if push comes to shove.
Yeah, you know, and there's this sexy idea, too, that just the power of the people around him was enough to stop Trump from doing dumb shit. But that's not how that works, right? We talked about this the last couple little bit of this podcast. You know, power begets power, and I don't think people are going to give up their power very easily. And I don't think people around him that are still with him disagree with Trump. You know, so he wants to declare martial law. I guarantee there's a general out there that'll run it for him. No questions asked. And so there's this, Trump isn't civil. He's surrounded himself with people who are not civil, right, in the same context we're talking about. So I don't think there's anybody to stop him. I think we want to believe that there is. But at the end of the day, I don't really know who or what can stop him. The Senate's not going to stop him. Supreme Court's not going to stop him.
Yeah, it's just an authoritarian power grab.
Yep, and there's nothing anybody can do about it.
So Trump escalates into whatever corner he feels the need to escalate into.
Yep.
What is at the disposal of, let's say, the Biden campaign to kind of curtail his aggressions?
I really don't know what they have a power to do besides attempt to get liberal groups to boycott or get leftist groups to boycott.
So you're kind of presenting the scenario in which Biden uses some form of soft power to try and kind of entice all these various institutions to choose Biden as the winner. You get protests going, you get corporations to choose Biden.
Yep.
Maybe you try and get some generals, some military people, some world leaders, previous presidents, you get some of the Never Trump Republicans on your side, and you try and just do kind of a PR propaganda marketing campaign to say, look, the outcome of this election, I won, I'm the right president, and you just see what kind of buy-in you can get.
Yep.
And then there's some of the various technically procedural or law and order-based things, which is, let's say you get to the January 6th electoral vote counting event, and you have the Dems control the House and the Dems control the Senate. Or let's say it's split. Do you engage in some even more elaborate shenanigans of refusing to certify the outcome of the Electoral College, which causes there to be no kind of assigned president, which then follows the line of succession, and you would have the Speaker of the House become the president? And you just continuously have the Electoral College outcome in question. You never choose a winner, so it just reverts to whatever the succession is.
Yep. I like that plan.
There's, you know, a potential for Biden to do something like call for a general strike, but that would be way too kind of pro-worker for him to do anything like that, and it would hurt Capitol too badly.
But there's no way that Capitol and worker are going to work together. There's no way. There's absolutely nothing that suggests that he can even pull that off. He hasn't engaged labor in a way that would make him even a viable candidate to do that.
It's also questionable whether Biden's campaign could even mobilize any form of protesting. He hasn't been in any way, shape, or form engaged on the sort of anti-police protesting that's occurred nationally. And I don't think that group of people is just going to like, oh, okay, let's support Biden now, because I think Biden's largely part of the problem they're protesting.
No, I mean, who's going to help him? Are we really going to be able to mobilize? And I don't think he has the ability to do that.
And should some sort of large-scale protesting occur, it's going to be met with Trump escalating and sending out the National Guard or telling his white supremacist groups to go from a standing by state to an active state, whatever that looks like. And there's a possibility of actual violence occurring.
You know, the scary part is actually the Proud Boys, as we want to call them, or that group of people engaging in a civil war fighting because they believe they've been activated. That actually is a pretty scary thing, because there's nothing left. There's no federal authority, there's no state authority, it's just pure cuckoo bananas at that point in time. And then that's like every man for themselves. And Trump isn't going to fight off his own supporters with his National Guards. He's going to round up individuals who were already being abused by them. And this is where it gets to be nutty. I think Trump, and this is not to be, you know, apocalyptic, I think Trump will, because his advisors are still human beings, may find that a lot of the stuff he would do is just limited by the fact that he doesn't have anybody to engage with him to do it. But at the same time, I don't see how he won't try to pull some bullshit.
From a just pure motivation perspective, he has nothing to lose by not going as hard as possible, because he's guilty of, you know, tax fraud and whatever other alleged crimes he's committed that he's susceptible to being prosecuted for once he's not president. He sees the writing on the wall a little bit there. You got guys like Cohen and Manafort that went to prison for him. So there's some precedent that you're really not wanting to be on Trump's side for pretty much anything, or it's going to end poorly. But at the end of the day, if Trump goes far enough and you are the victors, you get to kind of determine what happens. But I don't know. It's kind of a scary, dark place to go to, but I don't think we have to worry about it.
I don't think I'm not too afraid of that place to go to. Because I think there's enough people around that are going to like say, Trump, you can't do that shit. But at the same time, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to imagine a scenario where he doesn't have enough support to just do a few shitty things. Now, is he going to be a psychopath and ruin the government and ruin the world? Probably not be able to, you know, in that scenario, but at least he can still cause some chaos. I mean, we keep using the word chaos because that's fundamentally what it is. He's causing chaos. He's preventing a smooth transition from the person that won. And I think it's during this case that we can argue that he'll have the most impact on what happens, because he's going to go so far that the Republican Party themselves is going to halt it and say, no, that's too much. Or he's going to go just far enough that people are going to really enjoy what he did. I don't know. This scenario to me is both exciting to see if anything of substance can actually change, if he pulls shenanigans, you know, like get rid of the Electoral College or you know, watch certain institutions just melt away. But at the same time, I mean, he can do a lot of damage to real world, you know, issues. He could disband the entire COVID task force.
Yeah, but who cares?
Yeah, no, they're not fighting anyway. But Biden could come in with nobody.
Yeah, and it's just a total mess. It's really unclear in this sort of like worst case disaster scenario, like what the end game is.
Yeah.
Because from a certain point of view, Trump can only cause chaos for so long before the chaos is detrimental to Capitol.
Yep.
And at that point, Capitol will step in and in some way, shape or form, provide some steady hand, create some equilibrium of not chaos, just because there's too much money at stake. Like, having a full nightly riot in the street between two opposing political factions is not good for business.
It's not good for lending. It's not good for banking. It's not good for Uber.
Unless you need a ride to the protest.
Yeah, it's not good for PayPal. Unless you're transferring money to get bailed out. You know, it's also interesting to point out, too, that a lot of the institutions that have shifted over the Obama years have been a lot of tech companies. And they're kind of divided, too, on who they're going to support. But the classics are still there. I mean, you still have energy, right? You still have infrastructure. You still have banking that's now tilted towards Biden. So a lot of the old guards are still there. The new guards are causing a little more agitation. But, I mean, the old guards are still there, and I think someone has to yield to that.
So what you're saying is at the end of the day, neoliberalism will save us because the corporations have so much power and so much vested interest in ensuring that the government runs smoothly that they will correct Trump's chaos one way or another.
Yeah, there's so much, you know, transfer of your labor to the wealth of other people that's exactly it. Neoliberalism saves you because that's, you know, there's too much money to lose if it doesn't.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.